I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, some pretty dismal primary election results makes me worry for the future of Washington State and the country. Plus, charges have been dropped against one of the rioters who attacked me outside an ICE facility last year, and how soft-on-crime policies are actually hurting the very people Democrats think they'll help. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. The primary election was yesterday. This isn't really a national news show, but of course, you know, there were some disturbing results in Michigan in the Senate race, where they're sending again another far left extremist into the general election on the Democrat side. We'll probably talk about that a little bit in national news. I do want to talk about sort of West Coast and what happened in the primary election in Washington State, because I think, like all of us, you know, whether you live in Portland or California or here in Washington, I think that sane people are kind of waiting for a break from one party rule and any sort of indication that voters in these deep blue states are starting to understand how destructive the policies have been here, from soft on crime policies to targeting successful people for taxation, this shift towards socialism and really communism. I think California saw that just a little tiny bit of a shift that, you know, more toward Donald Trump. I mean, it's still a very blue state, but in the 2024 election. But Washington State, man, we ain't seeing a shift at all. And honestly, I think part of it is so many people are leaving the state. I mean, all of us, I guarantee if I did a poll, do you know somebody who's moved out of state? It would be like 100% yes. I hear it from people all the time who stop me and say, oh, thank you for what you're doing, but I'm leaving. I'm going to Idaho. I'm going to Montana. I'm going to Florida, whatever it is. And so in a state where, and I'm not even saying just conservative, but moderate voters are starting to get outnumbered, losing even 10,000, 20,000 people, that can be disastrous. And so I want to start with what I think are the most consequential races. And, you know, primary elections are one thing. The turnout's piss poor. You know, there'll be more people who turn out in November, but still, there are five state Supreme Court seats that will be on the ballot in November. Five. If you do the math, that's a majority. So for people who want to save the state and try to, you know, maybe save the entire West Coast with a little bit of change in this one party monopoly, this is an opportunity that we will probably never have again in our lifetimes. But still, frankly, Republicans aren't spending enough money on these races. Sane people aren't spending enough money on these races. This is the court that's going to decide whether the income tax is constitutional. So, look, I mean, the results are, I guess, as expected. So, Supreme Court position one, Colleen Melody, who is the choice of the far left. They think she'll sign off on an unconstitutional income tax. She got 51% of the vote. Edwards and Kohlberg, who I think both would have been good options, even add that up, it's still only 48% of the vote. So Edwards, Scott Edwards, will be going through to the November election with Colleen Melody. But I the only ads I've seen on TV are for Colleen Melody. And that matters in a race where you don't have an R or a D next to the name, and it's all going to come down to name recognition. So unless there's some real effort to spend a lot of money in these races by people who do not want to see a progressive supermajority on the state Supreme Court and don't want to see an income tax, then I don't see this changing. Judge position number three for the Supreme Court. Now, David Stevens came out on top. The issue is Jamie Hawke and Mike Diaz, they were both endorsed by sort of the far left, and they split some of the progressive endorsements between, you know, Bob Ferguson and Pramila Jayapal. They were endorsing Jamie Hawke, but Mike Diaz also had a lot of progressive endorsements as well. And again, you do the math, David Stevens only got 36% of the vote. The votes for Mike Diaz, they're going to Jamie Hawke. They're not going to David Stevens. So it's a matter of getting out the vote, making sure that David Stevens has commercials on TV. Because I've already seen a ton. We talked about that dumb one with Jamie Hawke, where they're trying to manipulate the minds of voters because they just want them to, it's name recognition. So it's that ad where Governor Ferguson's like, judge, and Pramila Jayapal's like, Hawk, because they're trying to do a playoff Seahawks. And you know what? Stuff like that works. It does, because people who are, you know, low information voters are going to be like, oh, Hawk, I remember that ad. Judge, Hawk, it's like the Seahawks. Fill in the circle. It's absolutely outrageous. All right, judge position five, Theo Angelus, who is just the guy who was assigned that job by Governor Ferguson. And, you know, they're hoping that he'll stay there. Dave Larson, who narrowly was defeated in a bid for state Supreme Court the last time around. He has 33% of the vote. Theo Angelus has 34% of the vote. They'll be going forward. And look, I think if there's any race I see having a pretty good opportunity, it's this one, because Dave Larson already has a lot of name recognition. Clearly, Theo Angelus didn't get a ton of support, but it's going to take a pretty significant effort. And then Supreme Court position seven, Deborah Stevens, I think she's going to be pretty hard to beat. She's already on the Supreme Court, 55%. Todd Bloom and Kareem Merchant, if you tried to bundle those together, it's still just not going to be enough to get him across the finish line. And then, of course, there's five seats. One of them wasn't on the primary because it's not, there's only two people, so it'll just advance until November. So yeah, Republicans have to spend money. And the issue is that they lose so much, and they're in such a state of disarray sometimes, the infighting in the party, that even the wealthy Republican donors don't want to give any money to these to races. Because you don't get to be wealthy by making bad business decisions. And it starts to be a bad business decision to throw good money after candidates that have no chance of winning. This is different, though. I mean, again, it's not an R and a D. You have this clean slate, and it's just going to come down to name recognition. So I know there are some PACs forming to try to spend money on these races, but it needs to be into overdrive if we hope to stave off the income tax issue. All right, a couple other races that I want to get to. Not the results that State Senator John Braun wanted in the 3rd Congressional District. This is one of the most watched races in the country. It had been at top of the list for most competitive congressional races in the country because the incumbent, Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, has been, I think, angering members of her own party because she's trying to sort of moderate herself and try to, and it has been traditionally a red district. It just only recently flipped blue, and so it is very much a purple district, but these results aren't great. And I don't know who the hell is doing the polling in this race. So John Braun, 39%, but he's just behind Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, who got 39% and a little more. And then this other guy, Brent Heinrich, he's a progressive. And so again, you add that up, Marie, I mean, his votes aren't going to go to John. They're not going to go to John. And I am so sick of polling. Because there was just a couple weeks ago, all the headlines were like, poll puts John Braun slightly ahead of Marie Glusenkamp-Perez. Does that look like, if these kind of results hold and Heinrich's votes go to Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, that's a blowout in a district that has been purple. And I know things can change with the primary election and more money is going to be spent and all of these things, but that's just not a great outcome. 4th Congressional District, I just want to talk about this because there's been a lot of drama in this race on who did President Trump endorse? Who didn't he endorse? So Amanda McKinney, 35% of the vote. She is the only Trump-endorsed candidate in this race. This is, of course, the seat that's being vacated by retiring Congressman Dan Newhouse. John Durski, who's the Democrat, is going to be heading to the November election to go against her. And then Jared Sessler, who's run about a billion times and hasn't won. He is in a distant third, 14% of the vote. And then Matt Bankey, who is sort of the more mainstream Republican choice, very poor showing, 10% of the vote. And it's interesting because Jared Sessler, he had gotten, last time he ran for this seat 2 years ago, he did get Trump's endorsement because Trump, of course, wanted Dan Newhouse out of the seat because Dan Newhouse voted to impeach him. And then this time around, Jared Sessler just copy-pasted. My understanding of the situation is, you know, Amanda McKinney entered the race. She got Trump's endorsement. And Jared Sessler just kind of copy-pasted it as his old endorsement from Donald Trump. And so then Republicans were being told by both candidates that they were endorsed by Donald Trump. But I think very, 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 very likely that Amanda McKinney will be the next congresswoman from Washington State in the 4th congressional district. And then just for fun, just to give us a good, nice feeling, at least some of the socialists lost yesterday, okay? Shama Sawant, Bye, Shama. Your comeback. No more. So Congressman Adam Smith in the 9th Congressional District had faced really two far left challengers. And then Doug Bassler, who I love his commercials. I don't know who does them. They're always corny, but they're funny. He's the Republican. He'll move ahead to take on Congressman Smith. He won't be able to win. But so Congressman Smith will keep his seat. But Shama Sawant, 13%. What was the bet I made? I think I said she wouldn't get double digits.
Yeah, and I think you promised like steak for everybody or something.
No, I said if she wins.
That's what I mean.
But not. But I think I said I didn't think she'd get double digits. We'll have to see where this shakes out for her. But it's pretty close. I mean, it's pretty close, right? So Shama Sawant.
Last time we celebrated her losing, she came back from behind and magically won.
11 percentage points. But even 11 percentage points, well, that would kind of do it here. Ahead of Doug Bassler, but I think that she's out. This has been called. So Shama Sawant, you know, I think her feelings are really hurt because she really was at the forefront of the socialist movement in America. I believe she was the first city council member in a major American city that openly declared herself a socialist. She, you know, served on the Seattle City Council for several terms. You know, there was an effort to recall her, all of these things. And then she's just sort of flailed from there. And her movement, she tried to kind of dip her toe and become a national voice. That didn't work out well for her. So she came back, tried this congressional bid. That didn't work out well for her. And it's really fascinating to me because socialism is having a moment. So why isn't sort of the OG socialist catching on and having a moment? Maybe it's because she's really annoying. I don't know. But there's a lot of socialists who are really annoying. So bye-bye, Shama. Let's hope that is your last political campaign. All right, again, we'll probably talk a little bit about some of the national races and what it means for the Democratic Party coming up in national. But I have a story I've been meaning to talk about for a couple days. I was pretty pissed off last week when I got word of this. And I am pretty pissed off today, frankly. And I just honestly want some sort of retribution over this. I don't know what that looks like, but about a year ago, in June of 2025, I was covering an anti-ICE riot outside the ICE facility on Tukwila. And you guys know the story well, but I think it's important for me to play a good chunk of what happened to me about 30 seconds after showing up. Here it is. Very peaceful. Highly peaceful.
F*** you, fascists! F*** you, fascists! F*** you, fascists!
Don't touch me with that sign. So you're okay to be in my face, but don't touch me with that sign.
Just shut up.
Who would do something like that?
Get the f*** out of here. Nobody f***ing wants to hear. Listen. Get the f*** out. No. Get the f*** out of here. Get the f*** out.
Holy shit. Go! Don't touch out! So what do you want to do with that?
Me?
So I can't go any further. So this is the fastest I can go. Leave! That's fine, we'll stay here.
Leave!
You already assaulted me once, and I will rip that mask off your face, and I will get your face, and you will go to jail for assault. So don't start with me.
Okay, yeah, it feels better.
Time.
Yeah. Go higher this time. Yeah.
And just blink while it's going?
While it's going, okay. As much as you can. Oh, there, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
Play.
Yeah. So that is part of the attack on me and my security guard outside the ICE facility in Tukwila last June. And, you know, I apologize for all the curse words, but I think it's important for you to try to get a sense as best you can about how, frankly, traumatizing it is and scary it is to be mobbed in that way and the hate and vitriol. that these people have for anyone that they perceive as a political enemy or against their movement. And that was the fourth time that I'd been assaulted in some sort of significant way by far-left Antifa factions. Most of this happened when I was a reporter at Fox 13 in Seattle. And, you know, I've had enough of it. And my husband doesn't even want me to cover these things anymore. I'm almost 40, and it's like, can't other people do it? But, you know, when we went out and covered it that day, I was one of the only members of the media there. The Seattle Times was there, and they covered it as some mostly peaceful gathering, despite all the video of what happened to me. And so after that happened, you know, I got assaulted by multiple people. They sprayed me in the eye with wasp killer, you know, the kind of stuff you shoot into the eaves of your home to kill wasps. And so I went to the Tukwila Police Department. I filed a police report. I spent hours working with police and handing over evidence and photos and videos, only to about 8 months later finally have one person charged in this case. So back, I believe it was April, we broke news that the Tukwila prosecuting attorney's office had filed two charges against Fabiana Cantera, who was one of the people who hit me repeatedly with a sign. And the two charges they filed against her at the time were assault in the fourth degree and disorderly conduct. And disorderly conduct was for her participation in the riot outside the ICE facility. And I was very happy that Tukwila Police, you know, is being hit with a sign, the worst assault in the world. No, but it was part of a prolonged attack against me and should be unacceptable in any civilized society. And so I was glad that Tukwila Police saw it through. You know, they weren't able to identify the two other suspects, but they were able to identify through the use of flock cameras, Fabiana. So we were waiting, and I had gotten, you know, a couple letters in the mail for requests to appear in court and all these things. And then finally, last week, Nicole and I are sitting getting ready for the show, and I got a call from the Tukwila Police Department. And this was a day before I was supposed to show up in court for like a case setting hearing. And they said, hey, just wanted to let you know that there's been a resolution in your case. You don't have to be in court tomorrow. They have dropped the charges against her in exchange for her taking anger management classes. There'll be nothing on her record. And she just had to give them a certificate that she took anger management classes. I can't tell you how mad I was. And I had an email exchange with the prosecutor, Karen Lentz, in the city of Tukwila. And I reached out to her because, again, I mean, when you watch the video of this, right? This is a prolonged attack on a member of the press that amidst a riot that's already happening. And so to think that out of all of that and the trauma of that experience, that only one person would be identified and charged and that they would see fit to allow that person to take anger management classes and get away with having nothing on their criminal record is outrageous. So I asked, you know, the prosecutor, look, is this standard? You know, and nobody even consulted me with this. And she said, you know, this is one of our typical dispositions on a case like this with no criminal history. And it's like, you know, a really easy way to not have a criminal history is for prosecutors to drop charges against you and let you take anger management classes. So now the next time she does something like this, they'll be like, oh, she doesn't have any criminal history. Let's give her anger management again. So nothing, and this isn't an issue of anger management. Anger isn't what causes something like this. It's a political and social agenda and a belief that in order to push that agenda, you have to use violence. And so I continued to go back and forth with the prosecutor, and to her credit, she did more than Seattle ever did in the many times I've been assaulted and our other friends have been assaulted in Seattle. Typically, nobody's even identified. And so I thanked her. I said, you know, I appreciate you guys sticking with this case. And I just said, I'm just really disappointed with this outcome. And she said that part of the reason why she charged Fabiana Cantera in the first place is that she wanted to see if she could get Cantera to identify the individual who tried to blind me with Wasp Killer. And Cantera, no surprise, said, yeah, I don't know who that is. I don't know that person, and she may or may not. And so the prosecutor basically says that she decided that since she couldn't identify that person or give them anything for what would probably be a felony assault, and she has no criminal history, they just let her off the hook for an anger management class. And again, I emailed back. I said, you know, I appreciate you attempting to locate, you know, all the individuals who were involved in this case. But to be frank, I'm disappointed. I said, this is the fourth time I've been assaulted while covering political unrest. The other three instances were during my time at Fox 13. Not one person has ever been convicted. I said, stalking, harassing, intimidating, and assaulting a member of the press should be unacceptable in the United States, not to mention the trouble the crowd caused for local police and federal agents that day. I said, they don't need anger management, they need consequences. A better resolution in my mind would have been a conviction on her record with at least a requirement for community service and a fine. To which the prosecutor responded, thank you for the feedback, I appreciate your position, I know justice looks different for everyone. I just don't see how that's justice. What about, like, having a fine to cover the cost of the security I need? And it is traumatizing. I realize I'm 38 and I've been covering unrest for 15 years. As a woman, it never gets easier to be mobbed by violent extremists. It never gets less traumatizing to be sprayed in the face with a chemical agent. No matter how many times it happens, it'll never... What about therapy for me? She gets anger management. What do I get? Not to mention, as I said, she wasn't just charged with assault in the fourth degree for her assault on me. She was charged with disorderly conduct. And nothing is going to happen to her for the disorderly conduct of participating in a riot. More on that in a moment. But I go through this whole ordeal, spend hours the day of and hours after the fact helping police build a case, helping police identify at least one of these individuals. So not only is she not going to have any punishment, neither is the person who tried to blind me with Wasp Killer.
Get the fuck out of here! Nobody fucking wants you.
Get the fuck out!
No! Get the fuck out of here! Get the fuck out!
Holy shit!
Yeah. No punishments for them because they haven't even been identified. Because if you wear a mask to commit political violence, well, we can't figure out who you are anyway, so we're not going to put too much effort into that. Also, no consequences that day for the gang of black-clad Antifa members who beat down a Good Samaritan military veteran who tried to come to my aid.
Stop! Stop!
No, they're assaulting someone. They're assaulting an innocent guy. What's wrong with
you?
They're assaulting an innocent
guy. You caused it. You just touched me. Do not touch me. I'm not touching you.
Yep, we can have gangs of black-clad leftist militants roaming the streets of America, beating people down, assaulting them, kicking, punching them, pulling a gun on them. And no consequences for them whatsoever because they're crafty and they can cover their face with a black mask. And also, I go back to... no punishments at all, either from the feds, frankly, or from Tukwila police for the original riot that I went there to cover. In the streets, blocking in and out, not letting anybody come and go from the building. Getting in the face of local police officers. They had to shut down the entire thoroughfare. And you can just do this. You get to just do this. And not only am I pissed off, but every one of those police officers should be pissed off. Because look, you want to give a therapeutic sentence to a woman because she hit me with a sign and you think anger management is better? What about she was participating in this riot? So no consequences for how she behaved around your officers? No consequences for any of them? You guys, this is outrageous. Why do you think that left-wing extremism has become so common in the United States of America? And in places like Seattle, Portland, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, they do this stuff and nothing happens to them. They do this stuff and they take an anger management class if if they get caught. And here's the thing, my 15 years of experience, do you think that this is the only time that Fabiana Cantera has been a part of a riot? Do you think this is the last time she's going to do something like this, given the fact that she got less than a slap on the wrist and has nothing on her criminal record? No, if you look in the Tukwila police report on this incident, so they talk about how they identified Cantera using flock cameras, etc. And it says this, it says a local address in Seattle was found for her. Detectives attempted to contact her at her place of residence. A building maintenance worker advised that a similar described female and a male lived at the address, but they'd packed up a vehicle as they were going to be gone for the weekend. Detective said, checking social media, Cantera posted on Instagram about going to the Portland protests. So after she did this to me and rioted outside the ICE facility in Tukwila, she was still doing these things. The day detectives went to try to question her, she was at the Portland anti-ICE protests, riots. And yes, it is personal. Because I shouldn't have to. I should be able to go cover someone. Anybody should be able to cover something or be walking in the streets of America without being attacked by left-wing lunatics or right-wing lunatics. But I look at January 6th, okay? Years after January 6th happened, the FBI was still knocking on doors around the country of people whose cell phones pinged in the vicinity of the U.S. Capitol. Years later, they basically did a whole circle around the Capitol, figured out whose cell phones were in the area, and they spent years tracking every single one of them down. So yeah, I can complain about the local, you know, police and prosecutors not really having enough time or energy or enthusiasm, whatever it might be, to investigate cases like this, or saying, it's so frequent at this point, just let Antifa tucker themselves out on the right-wing journalists, we don't care. But the feds also, especially under Donald Trump, I mean, we had a whole thing at the White House about Antifa violence. You're telling me you can't use some of the same tactics, investigative tactics that were used to track down every single J6er, whether they entered the Capitol or not, and use them to track down every single person who riots outside a federal building? Do the same thing. You're telling me you don't have cameras on that ICE facility, that DHS building? In some of the video, you can see that the people attacking me are on the lawn of the DHS building. Doesn't that then become a federal issue? The person who tried to blind me with wasp killer was doing it not on the public sidewalk, on the grounds of the ICE facility. You're telling me you don't have cameras that we can't identify and figure out and figure out where they went, who they might be, if they took their mask down at all? You got like every single J6er. And spent years doing it. And it is traumatizing, and it does piss me off. And I want to be able to cover these things, because if the local media is the only one covering it, they don't tell the truth about it. But every single, you know, independent conservative journalist who goes out there, Katie Davis Court gets assaulted. Jonathan Cho gets assaulted. Cam Higby gets assaulted. Savannah Hernandez gets assaulted. Nick Shirley gets assaulted. Nick Sorter gets assaulted. And Andy Ngo gets assaulted. And there are a handful of examples in the bunch of those assaults actually turning into criminal prosecutions. And that's the problem. And I should say, and I should take it back, that I do believe police care. And the Tukwila police that worked on this case were very understanding, were upset that this had happened. And ultimately, I know the prosecutor wanted to use this woman to get to someone else. But to say we're giving her this because she has no criminal history, well, now she still has no criminal history. And she's still doing these things. And I will say, and I don't even feel bad about it. I don't even feel bad about it. For this woman, again, Fabiana Lucia Cantera, date of birth, 8/15/1995. I have her date of birth, I have her name, I have her email. One of the things that she's posted about, one of the only social media footprints I can still find of hers, is a GoFundMe that appears to be trying to raise money to get her family here from Venezuela. You might think this is petty, I don't care. Is she here legally? Is she here legally? That's what I want to know. And I don't know, she could be. But I'd like to look into it. And I'm sure there's somebody watching who could look into it with that date of birth and that name. Is she here on, if she's got family in Venezuela, is she here on some sort of visa? Because these are not the kind of people who are causing, who are acting like terrorists in our community, who should be allowed to stay here. I pray to God she's here illegally. I pray to God she's here illegally. And someone is watching this who can figure that out. And if she is, that they can deport her ass from the country. I wouldn't lose a second of sleep over it. And if she is here legally, fine. The feds can prosecute her. And the feds should pick up this case where the Tukwila Police Department left off. Because clearly, you know, they've sort of run out of leads for the other individuals. If President Trump means it, if the DOJ means it, they stepped in the Savannah Hernandez case. They brought federal charges against those individuals that attacked Savannah Hernandez outside the ICE facility in Minnesota. And I think that's what we have to do. Because local police and prosecutors, you know, they're stretched thin, I guess. They have their therapeutic methods. These people don't need therapy or anger management. They need a jail cell. And nothing is going to change until they get one. So this is an absolute disappointment that this is the result. All of that, a whole year, 2 months, all the work we went through, all the cooperation with police and getting them evidence and all the police hours that went into this, and not jack shit happens to her. Absolutely outrageous. So I'm not letting this go. I'm going to find out whether she's in the country legally or on some sort of visa that can be revoked. You might say I'm a mean person for doing that. I don't care. I don't care at all. And I'm going to find any possible way to make her pay for what she did. Whether it's making sure that if when you Google her name from now until the end of time, this is the only thing that comes up. Or trying to make sure that the feds will take this case. Because she's on federal property committing crimes. So, Fabiana, if you think that you got off easy, not the case. We're going to work very, very hard to make sure that there are some consequences for you and the other people who conduct this kind of behavior and who terrorize our streets. Absolutely mind-boggling and outrageous. All right, coming up next, Democrats have pushed soft on crime policies for young gang members. But the truth is that that empathy is homicidal empathy, and it leads to unfortunate consequences for the young people they're trying to help. First, there has been a rash of reports. You probably saw it on King 5 News. Also, I think the AG's office put something out about it, about these fake contractors ripping off homeowners for roof replacements. Like, they'll come there, they'll basically do a crappy job, and the homeowner's like, oh my God, this has to be fixed. And they're like, well, we already got your money, so if you want it fixed, you got to give us a little bit more money. It's just outrageous. And that's sort of an old scam, right? It's happened, but there's been an uptick. So they're warning about it. That's why it's just so important to know the company coming to your home. That's why I put my name behind our friends at Valentine Roofing. Every customer can expect the Valentine experience. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service. So if you think your roof is maybe on its last legs, if you want to beat the rain, beat the mad rush that happens in the fall, Valentine Roofing now offering priority scheduling for your roof replacement. That means when you call Valentine Roofing today, they can get your job started within 3 weeks of signing the agreement. They also do metal roofing. I know that's been something more and more people are looking into, given the kind of spread of wildfire risk. So, and they make the process simple for you. You can expect an estimate with transparent pricing, options that fit your needs in about an hour. Since 2008, thousands of Western Washington homeowners have chosen Valentine for their roofing needs. You can trust them too. Call 206-ROOFING to schedule your free estimate. 206-ROOFING. Make sure you tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz. All right, so the Bite of Seattle shooting investigation continues. There's still gangbanger shooters out on the loose, and we don't really know anything about them or what they look like. But I want to talk about the 19-year-old believed suspected gang member who was shot in this shooting and killed. Junior Nico Simo. Here are some pictures our friend Jonathan Cho located on his social media. Yeah, looks like a gangbanger to me. 19 years old. And again, like, with the parenting comes into play here. This is on your child's social media. And they're going to be like, hey, what are you doing? What's with the stacks of cash? What's with the pretending to shoot a gun? What's with the bulletproof vests? What's with the tattoos? No, it's because this is just what happens, and it's just outrageous. So Junior Nico Simo was shot in sort of the exchange of gunfire, killed. I believe he died at the scene. And one of the things that has been true in gang investigations for a long time, and I've done some ride-alongs with gang units in the past, is they always say, like, today's shooter is tomorrow's victim, because this is all sort of in the same group. So if you're the one doing a shooting today, you might be the one shot tomorrow. I mean, retribution is part of that, but this is just the life that you're involved in, which is why, you know, these soft on crime policies that Democrats have been pushing in our state, and they think, oh, we've got to give these young people a chance. Oh, you know, we can catch them with a gun five times before we'll do something about it. They can steal 10 cars. No big deal at all. No bail for them. You know, we'll just let them out, let them back in their families. They think that that's helping them. It's not helping them. It is making it more likely that they end up being killed or that they end up doing something so serious that not even our soft on crime policies can help them at that point. So Como News had this story. Bite of Seattle shooting suspect had prior gun charge and run in with police. This is from Jeremy Harris. So it says Junior Nico Simo, 19, who was killed in Sunday's shooting, says, but they also believe he was one of the shooters, right? So he wasn't just like an innocent bystander. They believe that he was one of the shooters involved in the incident, right? So according to Como, juvenile court records show Nico Simo was arrested in 2024 after a Seattle police officer heard gunshots in Rainier Beach and quickly located him with a Glock 19 handgun nearby. Nico Simo was charged with one count of unlawful possession of a firearm and unlawful possession of a bump fire stock. Okay. According to a Seattle police report, the Glock was equipped with an extended round magazine and an illegal device known as a Glock switch, which enables the weapon to fire fully automatic, which is prohibited by federal law. Seattle said one of the guns recovered at the Bite of Seattle shooting was also equipped with a Glock switch. So here you had this guy in 2024 who was underage. So he was 19 at the time he was killed. So when he was arrested in 2024 with multiple things that Democrats have banned in Washington state, bump stock banned. Quote unquote, large capacity magazine banned. Glock switch illegal. Not to mention he was underage. So it didn't matter what kind of gun he had. It was illegal for him to possess. And again, because he's a juvenile and he's a black youth, like nothing happens to him because that's what they do. And so that's why I say that when you take it easy on these kids, you show there's no real consequences. They have no motivation to get out of the gang life and to stop doing it. And so they go through their teen years, they get off the hook, off the hook, off the hook, even with serious crimes, and then they end up dead. Or they end up as adults in prison. And in Junior's case, he wound up dead. On Sundays with Subscribers a couple days ago, we had retired Seattle Police Detective Ben Huey on the show. He was with the gang unit in Seattle for nearly 20 years. He just retired not long ago. And this is something that he brought up and we had a conversation about, you know, when you don't show them that there are consequences for their behavior early on when the stakes are low, the stakes are going to become higher and higher and their lives are going to be ruined. On the prosecution front, there's also been this push since George Floyd to basically take it easy on juvenile offenders. Like we've heard cases where you've got juvenile offenders, you know, they steal 10 cars and they're really not spending a day in jail. And now it's you could have five possessions of a firearm before they're going to do anything about it. They wanted to get rid of a mandatory enhancement for older gang members who recruit younger gang members to commit a crime, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That has to be basically a get out of jail free card in their mind.
Obviously, I have an issue where I think the victim's rights should be paramount in everything. The victim comes first.
Yeah.
So we started pushing back, including the gang unit prosecutors, like, this is unfair to the criminal also, because how can you go be a kid and get arrested for a gun, not even spend the night in jail? Go do a robbery, spend a night in jail, and get a deferred prosecution. Go do another robbery with a gun and maybe get a couple days in jail. And then all of a sudden they're 18 and you give them 5 years. Yeah. Where is the learning curve between a youth to say, hey, knock this off? Because when you're 18, you might get the book thrown at you. Might.
Yeah.
It's still Seattle, or I mean, Washington State, they have very low sentencing. But how is that fair for somebody who was dabbling in gangs and criminal activity and may or may not really understand all the consequences? And then they're 18 and they're hammered.
It's such a good point.
We had an issue with that.
That learning curve thing, that is the exact way to put it. And it's not only that maybe they might get, you know, 5 to 10 because they do something serious and now they're an adult. You're making it more likely they're going to get killed. Because as you said, you're dabbling. They're like, oh, there's really no consequences for this. And now their crimes get more serious and, you know, they could get shot by another gang member. And so that's what I really don't understand, is this unwillingness to sort of set an example early when the stakes are really low. And I guess that's just sort of an ideology maybe we just won't understand.
Yeah, we're very much on the same sheet of music there. We think there should be more consequences to teach. Because if you could hold somebody in a juvenile detention and not make it a day camp, but actually serve time, but also teach, that's where the youth violence prevention people could be interacting with these children, hopefully. And maybe Stearnway, you won't save everyone, but you will save some. Yeah. If you go to jail for 2 days for a violent crime, what have you learned?
Yeah, and the charges against Nico were dismissed in 2024. Imagine if he had to serve some jail time for that, even in juvenile detention. I mean, for anybody else who wasn't like a young Black teen who had, I guess he was probably 17 at the time, unlawful possession of a firearm, unlawful possession of a bump firestock equipped with a Glock switch, that can get you. And then if you add a firearm enhancement, imagine if he had spent even 2 months in juvenile detention. And then he has additional juvenile records that are sealed, and we don't know what they are. So this is someone who is very familiar with the criminal justice system. And clearly the criminal justice system didn't do its job in making him understand and reducing recidivism by saying there are consequences for your actions. And so now he's dead at 19. That's a failure of the criminal justice system. And that's what Democrats don't understand when they push these soft on crime policies in the name of what? Race and social justice? What's justice about him now being dead? What's justice about his family having to bury him at 19? And look, consequences have actions. He was one of the shooters. He engaged in the behavior. But I'll tell you what, had he served some time in jail or juvenile detention leading up to that, he might be alive today and he might be doing just fine. So it's just outrageous, not a surprise that he had gun charges that were dismissed just 2 years ago. It's unreal. And if you want to watch that full interview with Detective Ben Huey, he was such a wealth of knowledge. He was an awesome guest. I mean, even before he became a gang detective, he was working in those sort of areas of Seattle as a patrol officer. And that's why they recruited him into the gang unit. He knew these kids. He knew them by name. They knew him. So just his information about how the gang wars have sort of changed over the years, fascinating. You can sign up to become a subscriber. Watch all of our episodes of Sundays with Subscribers. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. All right, coming up next, inside WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. Some emails obtained by the Daily Wire show disturbing comments from Washington's Department of Corrections about men being housed with women. First, if you're looking to save some money as a family, or, you know, you're watching the news about the wildfires, maybe your home was impacted by the flooding this year, and you're wondering, do I have the proper insurance to protect myself and everything that I've worked hard for against all these natural disasters, or in the case of Spokane, arson, maybe it's just time to take a second look at your insurance, because we work so hard for everything we have. We want to make sure we have the right insurance. I mean, earthquake, whatever it is, there's a lot of ways that nature can kill you here. Or that arsonists can kill you or get your home burned down. Reach out to First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, and they'll just talk to you about maybe your concerns you have. For some people, it might maybe you think you're underinsured or you're overinsured. They can help you with all of that. When I first did the First Mark Challenge, they said that I was paying for insurance I didn't even need. And I don't know, insurance is freaking confusing. So they made it very simple. Mike and I have now used First Mark Insurance for 3 or 4 years. Nicole is insured through First Mark. Our business is insured through First Mark. And one of the reasons is, man, as I said, they make it simple. For our renewals this year, we didn't lift a finger. They emailed us and said, good news, we're saving you $2,000. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And then if you need them, you pick up the phone and you get a person here in Washington State who actually answers and is a real human being who speaks English. And that's nice. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Undivided viewers and listeners are saving thousands of dollars a year by making the switch. FirstMarkInsurance.com. And with that, let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. I feel like I'm talking fast today. I'm waiting, Starbucks. I'm waiting for my endorsement deal for you to stop caring about what the crazies say and advertise on our show. Started drinking tea lately instead of coffee. Yeah. A little sugar-free tea. It hurts my tummy less. have a lot of digestive issues. Mm-hmm. What was I talking about? Ah, yes, men in women's prisons. So the Daily Wire had this story inside WPATH. Trans org wants female inmates to overcome transphobia and share prisons with men. This story is crazy, and a lot of credit to the Daily Wire because they're one of the national outlets that's done a really good job at raising awareness for this horrific issue, which is absolutely cruel and unusual punishment of men saying, I'm a woman now, and being housed with women at the women's prison in Washington State. So first, let's talk about WPAT, because you probably hear this organization a lot. It stands for World Professional Association for Transgender Health, formerly known as the Harry Benjamin International Gender Dysphoria Association. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. It's devoted to transgender health. Our professional supporting and student members engage in academic research to develop evidence-based medicine and strive to promote a high quality of care for transsexual, transgender, and gender non-conforming individuals internationally. Something tells me that their academic research is not evidence-based, but that's just a gut feeling. So anyway, the Daily Wire explains that WPATH has some member-only forms that traditionally the public can't get access to unless you're sort of part of the organization. But Daily Wire had submitted some Freedom of Information Act requests, and what they found is interesting. So it says WPATH members receive access to a member-only form that discusses various topics related to transgender medicine and policy. Through a public records request, the Daily Wire uncovered almost 250 pages of messages from WPATH's member-only form written between June 2024 and November 2024. The messages offer a glimpse into the organization's cultural reach and challenge some of its public-facing recommendations. So one of the things here is that usually a FOIA request wouldn't get you access to any sort of private organization's like email exchanges or message boards, but in some instances, they were communicating with government officials. And government officials' emails are subject to the Freedom of Information Act, like if you are working for the Washington State Department of Corrections. So there's a woman named Michelle Webb who participated in these forms, and she is a Washington Department of Corrections transgender program administrator. So her participation in these forms is subject to public disclosure. Michelle Webb, a gender-affirming program administrator for DOC, suggested female inmates have, quote, open and frank discussions with trained staff to better understand the needs of men wanting to live their authentic lives in women's prisons. She wrote, quote, on this form, the cis female population should have open and frank discussions with trained staff, with community experts, to understand why the transgender and gender diverse females want to be in an affirmative environment. They are not trying to take resources. They are not getting more than cis females. They are just looking to live their authentic lives and have equity. So here you have this person with DOC being like, nah, the chicks need to just shut up. Essentially, the women, they just need a little more education. They need to be educated on what these trans women are dealing with and their desire, even behind bars, to live their authentic self. It doesn't matter if they murdered their mother and father and still have a penis and want to be locked in a cell behind lock and key with a woman. No, they just need to get over it and understand that this helps them live their authentic self. She goes on to say, many men have had a difficult time integrating into women's prisons and were not accepted by the cis females. She wrote on the forum, transgender and gender diverse females living in the cis female facilities have all mentioned something they call the mask, meaning the mask they wore in male facilities, the mask that kept them safe. It allowed them to blend in and not draw attention to themselves. When individuals were moved to the female facilities, they found it difficult to drop the mask, and this made their integration into the female facilities extremely difficult. They were often not accepted by the cis females and on occasion were ostracized. Well, gee, maybe it's because some of them ended up assaulting the cis females. Maybe it's because some of them ended up raping the cis females because you can't have consensual sex in prison. Maybe that's why they were ostracized, because you had these women who didn't want to spend a 20-year prison sentence in the same cell as someone with a penis. And the condescension from this woman. Oh, they just need to learn more. Leanne O'Neill, who's with America First Legal Affairs, we've had her on the show multiple times because she has been one of the biggest champions. And they have a lawsuit going on right now about some of what happened at the Washington State Correctional Center for Women when a biological convicted killer was placed there. There's also a convicted sex offender who was placed there because now they're a woman. There's just a lot of outrageous examples. She responded, she told the Daily Wire, women should be able to rely on correction staff to prioritize their physical safety over the feelings of men. Quote, these emails raise serious questions about the influence WPATH has exerted over correctional policies affecting some of the most vulnerable women in government custody. Female inmates should never be treated as collateral damage in the pursuit of an ideological agenda. Department of Corrections has a legal and moral duty to protect the women in their custody from foreseeable physical and sexual harm, not to prioritize the comfort of male inmates over the safety, dignity, and rights of women. But don't we just see that all the time? Whenever it comes to the trans agenda, the feelings of men are put over the safety of women. And the feelings of men in women's sports. You know, oh, a man feels a certain way, so now a woman or a young girl has to see a penis in the locker room. Oh, you just gotta have to deal with it. Doesn't matter if you're 8 years old, you'll have to see that penis in your locker room because they feel a certain way. Annalee Wilson, she just has to suck it up and lose over and over again to a biological boy because if she didn't allow him, they didn't allow him to compete, his feelings would be hurt. Her feelings don't matter. And for these women in prison, their feelings, their sense of safety and security behind bars doesn't matter. The feelings of a man to feel as if he needs to belong matter more. This is the world. I mean, Democrats, I say it all the time. Sane Democrats know this is wrong. You know this is wrong. You're really that cowardly still that you can't say something about it? And I know we have a lot of momentum on this issue, but I mean, now it's getting safer and safer to speak out about it. You're just so worried about the electoral consequences of saying something that the vast majority of Americans believe. Just said it, spit it, say it. The truth will set you free. I promise you'll feel so much better once you actually say it. Absolutely outrageous. All right, in national news, the Denver City Council considering a slavery acknowledgement, and Clay Travis wants to buy a WNBA expansion franchise and name it the Nashville Bulls. Good stuff. First, a lot of investors right now focused on AI, crypto, tech, and what's happening in the Middle East and the impact that that's having on inflation and oil prices. The question is your financial advisor spending enough time looking at all of those things and managing your portfolio's risk? If you're not sure, get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. And I think that that's a good advice for anyone, really, even if you think that your retirement portfolio is doing just fine. It doesn't hurt to get a second opinion. Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing, totally free. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, and all across social media. Just search Know Your Risk Podcast. All right, in some national news, Denver City Councilwoman Chantel Lewis has introduced an idea. You got the land acknowledgements. Why not, you know, keep going in that direction? Slavery acknowledgements. That's what she wants. Denver City Council weighs new slavery acknowledgement that would be read at the start of meetings. The language, which also references Jim Crow laws and the Ku Klux Klan, would join the land acknowledgements. So you'd go from the land acknowledgement right into this. I'm just going to read what they want to add to the beginning of meetings, okay? We acknowledge that our country's economy, infrastructure, and resulting generational wealth would not exist as they do today without the stolen and forced labor of enslaved Africans and their descendants, who suffered the horror of the transatlantic trafficking, chattel slavery, and later on dehumanization through segregation and Jim Crow laws. We acknowledge and remember those who did not survive the Middle Passage, as well as those who were beaten and lynched at the hands of white Americans. We recognize the terror inflicted by the Ku Klux Klan, who historically counted among their members numerous government officials in Denver and others in positions of power. We stand with those who are still suffering while fighting for their freedom. I mean, look, yes, slavery was bad. I think we all kind of understand that. This is just the virtue signaling times 10. So some council members push back at the language, saying that, you know, it's assigning actions to specific groups or races. Here's a little bit of the discussion.
It's about, like, my family's history. And my dad was a migrant worker and grew up working in the fields. And so I see this, and I also think of an experience of Colorado and of what, like, my family has experienced. And I'm asking, was there consideration of expanding or broadening to be able to reflect that?
No, I think we thought about it in the same way that we did the land acknowledgement, in terms of, like, foundational, like the foundational experience within this country. And so the labor being specific to those that were taken from Africa onto this continent, and that land, that labor being forced.
Do you know of another city that names a perpetrator group? So, like, the phrase at the hands of white Americans. I know that there are a bunch of labor acknowledgments that talk about systems, like white settler colonialism, but it doesn't talk about groups. Historically, you know, the family of labor acknowledgments tend to talk more about systems instead of groups.
Yeah, so again, the language came from examples from all across the country that we had kind of put together. I would imagine that is probably uncomfortable, but in the conversations that we had, no one had pulled that out specifically to say, hey, can we look at this language and do something differently?
I'm not uncomfortable. I didn't have any slaves. So I'm fine. I'm just fine. I don't feel discomfort at all over slavery. You know, it's sad, but I didn't do that. I didn't. What do you want from me? And also, white people weren't the only people who had slaves, but they don't want to hear that. They don't want to have that conversation. And it's just insane that in some of these very poorly run cities, this is the kind of nonsense that they're focused on. They've delayed the vote until August 11th. They're going to consider revising and or expanding the statement, as if that statement wasn't long enough. They might expand it to include a whole bunch of other things. All right, I wanted to talk about this yesterday. I was just focused on other things. So, of course, a lot of momentum in the fight to protect girls and women's sports. A lot of it started right here in Seattle when we had the rally outside the Storm Fever game. So Clay Travis, who's the founder of OutKick, he, you know, he's made a lot of money in his career, and he has propositioned the WNBA with a couple things. Here he is on Jesse Waters.
I have challenged the WNBA, which says some of their coaches have been saying that men who identify as women should be eligible to play in the league. Okay. Now there's a French superstar, 21 points she's averaging. And by she, I mean he, 20 rebounds a game. Okay. I want to do two things. One, I want to have a boys high school team versus the WNBA Las Vegas Aces. I'll put $10 million on the line. The boys are going to win. We're going to put it on pay-per-view. We're going to make a lot of money for charity. Secondly, Jesse, I am putting in an application to get a WNBA franchise for my home, Nashville. It's going to be the most inclusive team that has ever existed. Only trans, only men who identify as women on the team. Our motto, one love, two balls, the Nashville Balls. We are going to be the greatest women's basketball team starring men of all time. The best women, Jesse, are men.
Yeah, and it's funny, but he's serious. So he says $10 million, the reigning WNBA champions play, he says, a high school team of my choosing, a high school male team of his choosing, and the winner gets to split the $10 million. So that would be a lot for a WNBA team, for its players, to split $10 million, and it would definitely be a lot for a boys' high school team to split $10 million. And there's a bunch of boys' high school teams volunteering to do it, and the WNBA hasn't responded at all. It's because they know that the women would get creamed. It's outrageous. He mentioned there Julie Tetart, who is the transgender man, the man, playing pro women's basketball in France. Let's check out Julie's moves.
Fall à 3 points qui décoche sous les sifflets des Monégasques. Et la remontée de balle, il y a un 2 contre 1 à jouer là. Est-ce qu'elle peut y aller toute seule? C'est tard. Sur le Eurostep. Elle a effacé Marie.
Yeah. I mean, bigger, faster, stronger, just plowing through women. And Julie has said, I'd love to play in the WNBA in the United States if they'd have me. Well, why don't they? Lead scorer, lead rebounder in France. That is definitely a way that the WNBA gets players from European leagues and overseas. And Julie's the best of the best that France has to offer. So if these WNBA coaches really mean it, that, yeah, we want to be inclusive and exclusion isn't the answer, then why aren't they recruiting Julie Tietart? I don't know how to pronounce that, okay? I've only been to France once. Yeah, absolutely jacked. Because it's a man. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our subscriber show poll, which I hope you guys don't depress me and disappoint me with your answers to it. And then we'll get to comments from the live stream. First, a lot of homes going on the market in Washington state right now. And that's true up and down the West Coast because people are fleeing. They're fleeing in mass from our bad policies. And I know I hear from people all the time who stop me and say, Brandy, I'm thinking about leaving, or we're starting to look at places in Arizona. I don't want to lose you, but I'm also not going to guilt you into staying. So if you're going to leave, you might as well use one of our show sponsors on your way out. sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. And Wes is great. He's been doing this in our state, in this market, for a really long time. He's been through all sorts of ups and downs in the market. And so he can walk you through what's happening right now. A lot of competition on the market. It means that you can't just throw up your house and hope for the best. You have to have a strategy. And that starts with a free market analysis. So just reach out to Wes, say, hey, I'm thinking about selling my house. Can you explain what the market is doing in my area? He'll be more than happy to do that. And then go through the strategy, whether it's, you know, hey, we need to make some cosmetic upgrades. Here's what I think is worth it. The staging, all of those things factor into whether your home stands out in a sea of listings. So go to sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, our daily subscriber show poll, just because I was so depressed by the results of the primary, but I should be used to being depressed by the results of elections here by now. I asked you guys a simple question. Did you vote? Did you vote or did you not vote? Nicole, I swear to God.
No, I did, and I helped other folks as well.
Folks as well?
Folks as well.
That? Okay, good. So. All right, you guys aren't depressing me. 97% of you said you voted. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And I would expect if you watch a show like this that you're going to be able to vote. Deanne says, I'm 64, haven't missed an election since I turned 18.
Wow.
Love that. Let's see, Hugh, not voting is unthinkable. Cynthia says, I want to know why people did not vote. It's so easy with the mail-in to drop in the ballot. It upsets me. Pat says, we got to stay engaged. The crazy socialism Dems have to be stopped. I was trying to see if somebody explained to me why they didn't vote. One of the, Andy says, my state's primary isn't till September. Okay, Andy, that's an excuse.
And then count.
Maybe that's where some of the no votes are coming from. Chris said, voting is my license to bitch. Don't vote. Shut the F up. Yeah, 100%. Paula says, I voted right away, but unfortunately, the other three voters in the House didn't feel it mattered. Paula, you gotta shame them. You gotta shame them into believing that it matters. My husband and I, we always do it together. He just votes the way I vote. Let's be honest. We don't really, it's just two of the same ballots, essentially. All right, let me see if I can get a couple here quick from the old locals. Patsy says, if you don't vote, you can't bitch. I like to bitch. Yeah, that's true. JP, yes, because I've accepted that a fatalistic ally is worse than an incentivized adversary. Very deep stuff right there, indeed.
Wow.
All right, let's get to comments from the live stream. Miranda isn't here today. She's traveling back to Miami in time to do Florida Report with us tomorrow. So these are Nicole's choices. You better hope they're good.
Yeah, well, you know, do my best.
Also, Lucky is here today. And she's been very, very good. Hi, sweetheart, my dog. Because it is so bad where I'm at, the smoke.
At least a little bit better here.
Yeah, and even we've got the air purifier running in our main living room. It's not a very big one, but it's still like
It's rough.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
you
bad.
Just feel it in the back of your throat like you're eating it.
Yeah, so I brought her into work thinking it would be better. I don't know. And you're being so good. I love you so much. You're so cute.
I don't think this is her favorite place with no windows.
Yeah.
She needs windows.
She doesn't love it. Alpha Charlie Tango, Seattle is dead. Washington is dying.
Right. Sure. I feel like this should be, it probably means something, but B. Shishman. I don't know. I'm not sure. I believe Western Washington will change either, but I have noticed some people are starting to wake up, by which I mean developing a basic child's understanding of economics. And sure. I think that's referring to, like, socialism didn't win quite as quite as much, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, didn't win, the candidates that Katie Wilson endorsed against, you know, like more mainstream Democratic candidates, they lost horribly. Yeah. So she doesn't have the Mamdani touch, so to speak.
Well, and I believe that most of the socialism is in Seattle. So then once you start voting outside of Seattle, you lose some of that grasp they have.
Yeah, I will say pretty horrifying that Al-Sayed won in the Michigan Senate primary for Democrats. But who knows? I mean, I saw some clips with Democratic voters saying, okay, if he wins, I'm going to vote for the Republican. So we'll see what happens there. But he believes America deserved 9/11, and that's the kind of person who Democrats want to represent them in the United States Senate. It's wild. All right, J.J. Beck, definitely not a Sawant fan, but at least she has the balls to actually state she's a socialist instead of hiding under the Democratic socialist umbrella. At least with her, we know exactly what we're getting. And that's true. And I've said that about her. It's like, you know, you're getting crazy 100% of the time. She's not going to flip flop. Like Gavin Newsom, I didn't pull this, but I retweeted it. He posted this morning. Congratulations to Abdul Al-Sayed on a hard-fought victory. Trump and the GOP are trying everything to rig the rules and silence voters, but they can't stop a Democratic Party united around working people and accountability. On to November, let's take our country back. He's cheering on like one of the most radical leftists running in America right now, saying we need to unite. So you're saying that that's what you want. You want socialism and communism.
Right.
He is such a shapeshifter. He tries to figure out, who do I need to be to become president? Who do I need to be to become president? And it's just
scary.
Sickening.
H. Bunny says, how come pastors don't take the time to talk to the parishioners about how important it is to vote? And that's true. We've been saying that quite a bit. And I mean, some of them do. We know we've talked to some who tell their people to vote often.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why people aren't voting.
Yep.
I don't understand.
It is really frustrating. And or people who are just totally disengaged.
Well, and then there's a couple religions who would be likely to vote red and they don't vote at all because that's the religion. I don't understand that one either.
On charges being dropped in the attack on me, Houdat Washington says these people are becoming a thorn and soon they will get their FAFO moment. Yeah, I mean, I hope she's in the country illegally and I hope she gets deported. I don't know if that's the case. Might not be, but something needs to happen to her. And Tiffany makes a good point. File a civil suit against the protester. If the state won't hold her accountable, you should be able to hold her accountable. Adults need to take back control.
A couple of people mentioned that.
Yeah, so. And you can file a civil suit. I mean, there's definitely evidence that she did something, but I have so many lawsuits going on right now. And as Nicole knows, every morning I come in and complain about how being much work goes into our lawsuit against the state on our press passes. It's been draining.
From Doug Troyer, violence is the weapon of those who support socialism / communism. It is a trait of this ideology.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. D-Man in Seattle, who are they to drop charges that I'm asking you? That's insane. I will say it is a little surprising, and not because of like who I am or the high profile nature of it. I would just hope that anyone who's the victim of a crime, that the prosecutors at least give them a heads up, like, hey, we're going to drop these charges. This is what we're going to do. And they did tell me a couple months ago, you know, we might end up doing some sort of therapeutic deal with her. I guess I didn't think that would mean, and maybe I'm naive, I didn't think that would mean no criminal record at all. I assumed that would mean like, hey, you know, plead guilty to this, you'll have a suspended sentence. Like the woman, because the one charge that's ever stuck didn't have to do with a riot, but that woman from Spokane who threatened me to come to my home. And she got a year suspended sentence, I think, but had to plead guilty. Still has a harassment charge on her record. Mm-hmm. That's better than like dismissing it altogether. That makes no sense to me.
Right. And Sun Millet says, now I need
management. Now I need anger management. Yeah, literally. All right. On the situation with a gang member who was shot and killed, who probably could have been held accountable sooner. Tino Way says, no. Sounds like what?
I think it's just no way. Sorry.
says, sounds like Washington needs to have a scared straight program for teens. They would never allow that.
No.
Never.
So on the transgender administrator saying that females in prison just need to
get over it,
get over their transphobia. Mary says, I have a problem with this cis term. Let's call real women XX, and anyone that cannot pass a simple swab test for that needs to be placed on the trans XY.
Needs to be put in places just for the trans XY. Yeah, have a separate facility just for transgender people. I mean, that is the only reasonable explanation.
Although then they just get, I think that's a thing in Denver or somewhere, or some in Colorado somewhere, they have like a transition area or like rooms or area of a jail that transgender people can go to, so they don't have to go straight from men to women jails or whatever. But that's ridiculous too. You're getting these special accommodations. It's special supposed accommodation. To be jail, not fun.
Prison, yes, absolutely.
Or prison, not fun.
All right, good comments per the usual. Nicole, thank you. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I was going to play this yesterday, but I felt like the news was so serious yesterday, I didn't want to like water it down at all. But Jay Inslee, former Washington Governor Jay Inslee, before it came out that the wildfire that's destroying, has burned 700 homes in Spokane, was started by a convicted felon arsonist. Here's what Jay Inslee, of course, had to say on his social media.
It's a beautiful morning here in Lopez Island, but I'm so concerned. Talk to my friend, a legislator in Spokane, whose home was, he had to evacuate because of these massive fires in Spokane County. The whole state's under threat now, climate change. You know, climate change isn't some existential global thing. It's our neighbors. It's our friends. We had to fight for them.
Climate change. Oh, do you think he's corrected the record? No, I don't know. Maybe climate change and the fear over it drove this convicted killer arsonist to light the fire. Like maybe he thought, look, we need to wake people up to the threat of climate change. So I'm just going to start this fire and watch how fast maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe Jay Inslee knows something we don't know. All right. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you, Lucky, for behaving yourself. She didn't make any camera appearances, though. Not even her tiny little tail made an appearance on the cam today.
She's being so very good.
Cute.
Very good girl.
I love you, Lucky. I love you guys, too. A little bit more love for our paid subscribers who cough up $5 of their hard-earned money every month to make this show possible. If you've been procrastinating, today's the day. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show, and then I'll have a little bit more appreciation for you as well. See you tomorrow.